There's only one way for true peace, lasting peace, complete and total peace to reign on earth. And that is when Jesus will come back, return to lead us, to be a king over us and the whole world. And that's what we're talking about in this series. You might notice I've got something new here, a little flip chart. Isn't that going to be exciting? You just can't wait, can you? Yeah. I'm going to draw on it. This is my favorite way of teaching, you know, to get out the old, you know, flannel graph would be better, but hey, this will do. So we're talking about Advent. We got a heck of an echo up here, guys. I don't know if you can take care of that. I think I'm in the monitors or something. The Advent series we're doing is about the second coming. Advent means arrival. It means a coming in, a presence. And so normally actually this is fine, normally we do the first coming, we celebrate the first coming, the first Advent, that's what Christmas is all about, but we believe that Jesus was born and he grew to be a man and he died to save us from our sins, but he resurrected and then he ascended to heaven, and that he is coming again. That is all part of our heritage as believers. And so we're talking about that last part. There's a lot of unknowns to that. I've been very honest with you in this series. Like, I don't know if this is going to be the way it is. And like I said, I've quoted her now 3 times, my sister, you're wrong. You know, she'll say to my face, like, you're wrong about it. Because we're probably all wrong. If you have a theory about it, you're probably wrong. We'll not know until it happens. But this series is meant to give us hope. Hope in the midst of turmoil. It's meant to give us peace, calmness in the midst of all the craziness that's going on, joy in the midst of sorrow. And next week, we're going to emphasize love, because that's what it's Advent. That's what our candles are all about. I'm finding as we go through this series about Jesus' second Advent that there's basically everybody somewhere on this spectrum that I have on the screen here. Is this in the way for people? I can put this out of the way for a moment. Oh, boy. Here's the spectrum. You can put that up on the screen where people kind of are in their willingness to care. Oops. Nothing nice. We'll worry about that later. Is there a line graph, Sarah? Carrie, it's the wrong set of slides in there. So here's what I think. I'm going to move on. There is a subset of people, let's put them over here, that could really care less about the second coming. It doesn't bother them. There's nothing about it that they're terribly concerned about. Then there's this other group of people, clear over here, that they wear tinfoil hats, and they read the headlines like, he's coming back, I can see it, it's today, or maybe tomorrow, or May 27th, or whatever the day. There's people who have it calculated out. There's actually, if you Google days that were predicted for Jesus' second coming, you'll find hundreds in a Wikipedia page, maybe thousands, I can't remember. But there's a ton of them out there. People just thought, well, here's the date, and that most of those dates have come and gone. There's another couple dates for 2030 and 2050 that are out there yet. So you got people who are on both sides of the spectrum. Some people don't care at all, and some people care a whole lot. Both of them would say this: I don't care because it doesn't impact my daily life. And then these people over here, I care a whole bunch because it impacts my daily life, because they live their life by it. And so that's spectrum, and anywhere on that spectrum is pretty much expected to be the case for a room this size in a series like this. I listened to my sermon from last week this morning. I listened to it again, and I was like, actually, I really kind of like it. Everything's falling apart. I kind of like the sermon, but it was really long. And I could see how somebody who might be on this side of that spectrum might go, these sermons are not for me. And so to you, I apologize. It's going to be long today and next week too. So, but for those of you who are maybe more on this side of the spectrum, this might be right up your wheelhouse a little bit. Some people just can't be bothered by it. Other people feel like this is their bread and butter. This is what they need. And so, again, the reason we're doing this series is so you'll have hope in the midst of uncertainty, peace in the midst of turmoil, love in the midst of hate, and joy in the midst of sorrow. Last week, we looked at Paul and Peter and their take on the second coming. We looked at passages from 1st and 2nd Thessalonians and 1st Peter, and their summary was this: do not be alarmed or shaken. Don't be afraid. Live holy and godly lives. Love your neighbors. Don't worry about that so much. Just live your life. Live it to your fullest. Live it to your best. Be holy and godly. But be ready, because Jesus could come at any time. They both say, like a thief in the night. Could come anytime. You don't know when a thief is coming. And then this last thing was this: what you hope for shapes what you live for. If you're hoping for everybody to die and get their comeuppance, then that's how you live your life. But if you're hoping that everybody will come to repentance, then maybe that's how you live your life as well. Don't respond with hostility, but respond to hostility with love and generosity, motivated by hope in the coming of Jesus Christ. So, are you hoping for everybody to be wiped out, or are you hoping for everybody to have repentance? And wherever you are on that spectrum of interest, remember that what you hope for shapes what you live for. So, that was last week, and now this week and next week are like a part one and part two of Jesus' words about his own second coming. We're going to look basically at Matthew chapter 24 and 25 this week, next week, but we're going to start with the last couple verses of Matthew 23. These three chapters together make up what's called the Olivet Discourse. It's where Jesus is kind of downloading all of his final instructions and information before he went through the suffering and the death that he ended up going through. Most of our like second coming theology from the Gospels comes from these two chapters that we're going to focus on. So over the last few years, we have been exposed to things that most humans have been exposed to for millennia, but we've just not been affected or impacted quite like we were in the last couple years. We've wondered out loud, like, when is all this 2020 craziness going to end? Oh, it's 2023? That starts in a couple weeks. Mind blown on that. Like, it still feels like we're in the craziness of 2020. When will there be peace on earth, politically, globally? When will we have economic stability again? When will we have health again? Honestly, myself, having grown up in the 90s and then into the 2000s, and most of us in here, probably that's the case for us. Prior to the pandemic, prior to the crazy year of 2020 that's lasted up till now, our biggest hiccups that we remember, I would say, this is just me talking here, the Great Recession of 2008, that was a big hiccup, and then the 9/11 attacks, right? Those were the biggest things to kind of interrupt us, biggest negative events that impacted all of us in one way or another. And some of you in here weren't even born for those things, so God love you. 2020's your welcoming to the world. But what I'm trying to say is actually we're spoiled. We as Americans in general are spoiled. I heard one commentator say that actually what we've experienced over the last couple years is a regression to the norm of what humans have normally experienced over cross cultures and over the course of time and millennia. Like, that's just the way humans have normally lived. There's sickness that goes around and people get wiped out. We're spoiled to think that there's a certain economic stability that we should have, and there's certain growth that we should have, and it should always be upward and to the right. We should always have that. But really, we think that we deserve health and wellness, but we think that war and violence won't impact us, and that's been our case for the most part. For decades, we've experienced that, but it simply isn't the nature of living human life. Human life has difficulty and has struggle in it. Most of the people living today think this is true. Most of the people living today have experienced more sickness, more illness, more death, more war than we do, than we have even now. I'm trying to tell you, we're spoiled, but these things happen. And then all of the preceding generations before us, think about from the World War II generation back, how much bloodshed there was, how much sickness would just wipe out entire people groups, how much economic instability there was in those days. We've got it easy compared to every generation that has preceded us, and for that, I am so thankful to live in this time. I know we talk about going back to the good old days, but honestly, how much easier could we have it than now? We have toilets that flush, you know. We have medicine that generally works. We do not suffer like we used to. With that said, I would like to suggest this, that we are closer now to burning the entire face of the planet through nuclear war than we ever have been before. Merry Christmas, everyone. So if you think peace on earth, goodwill to all men and all people. We were close to World War III in January of 2020. I don't know if you remember that. There's rumors of World War III coming around, some attacks with Iran. We like went back and forth with each other. Do you even remember that? Like it was a blip on the radar now. But it was a big deal back then. But the possibilities of conflict now are even greater than they were then with what's going on with Russia, Ukraine, and across the globe. 6.63 million people died from COVID-19 since that time. By the way, I quoted that number a few weeks ago in a sermon, and I quoted it as that being the case for America, and I was wrong. When I researched for this one, I was like, oh, I quoted that wrong. So I wanted to clarify that. 828 million people across the globe are food insecure and go to bed hungry. A tenth of the population go to bed hungry. 49 million are teetering on the edge of famine. We don't hear much about earthquakes unless they hit here in America or they're huge. In 2021, just last year, we had more earthquakes across the planet than there were like half again as many earthquakes as there was the previous year in 2020. There was half again more as what there was in 2020. Interestingly, though, I can't quote that stat without giving you this one. In 2022, there's been half as many earthquakes as there was last year. Less. There's been a lot less earthquakes this year than last year. We've got people who blatantly tell lies in our media, social media, generally without consequence. And so we don't know who to trust. We don't know who there is that we can believe. We generally just trust the echo chambers that make us feel like we're on the right team. And so we're like, well, that I trust this person because that's the person I trust. But here's what's interesting. Jesus said all of those things were going to happen. That's what we're going to read about. Jesus said all of these things that I just talked about that we've experienced in the last couple, 3 years, he said all of those things were going to happen, and they've all happened. And here's the thing. We have something called recency bias. Recency bias is the habit of humans to think that the latest crisis is the most important crisis. It's the one that happened just this one. That's the one that makes the most impact because it's the one that makes the most impact on me right now. And so we don't really tend to remember or think about all of the crises before because we're so focused on the one that happened just now. And the vantage point makes all the difference. Were we able to get those slides going? So here's Mount Rainier. I took this picture back in June. Mount Rainier, I think, is the fifth largest mountain in the lower 48 states. 14,417 feet. I took this picture about 10 miles as the crow flies from the peak. So if like, you know, a 10-mile hike's not too bad. It looks like it's right there, doesn't it? Like from this point, like we could just walk up there, couldn't we? Just walk. We just walk right up to that mountain. It's only 10 miles away. You know, it's like just a 10,000-foot difference. But, you know, we could technically walk that. It looks like it's right there. But do you know, if we were to walk as the crow flies 10 miles from here and go westward, we would wind up in Alexandria. Now, that's not so glamorous as Mount Rainier, I get that. But Think about what all you might have to traverse through in order to get to Alexandria from here as the crow flies, just straight away. It's easy to drive there, but I'm talking about walking, all the hills you'd have to go up and over, all the little creeks and valleys, the houses you would have to walk through. That's awkward. Excuse me, I've got to cut through. I'm getting it to Alexandria. You see, we can't get there without overcoming the obstacles that are in the way. Go to the next slide, if you would. You can't see this. I knew you wouldn't be able to see it, so I highlighted all the peaks that are in the way from that vantage point to the vantage point, or to the peak of Mount Rainier. I don't know how many there are. There's a bunch. You have to climb up and down all of those things. Now, I'm going to draw this out on this piece of paper if I can make it work. I really hope it works. I've pinned a lot of hopes and dreams on this working. I did not expect it to not work. So if you think about a mountain, I'm going to draw a mountain here in the background. This is, we could call it Mount Rainier if you want to. There's a snow-capped mountain back there. There's a mountain. You like to see mountains? You like to go? Okay, so you're at a Buena Vista point, standing with Jesus at some beautiful overlook, and oh man, this is going to be trouble, isn't it? So here's Jesus here. We'll give him a stick figure Jesus, and he's got a beard because he's Jewish, and he's going to be king, right? So there's Jesus, and you're standing there with him. Doggone. But here's the thing. Just like that, there's all these little foothills that are in the way from getting to the mountain. Now, all these foothills, you can see them all. You can see these better than you can see those, right? They all kind of look the same. They all have a rounded top, and they're all getting gradually bigger and bigger. But none of them are actually the mountain that you're trying to get to, right? And so the picture that Jesus is going to paint for us is that we have certain things that we have to go through before we get to the main event. And what we're going to talk about this morning is that this big mountain here is the main event where Jesus comes back. That's the focal point that we want to get to, but we also got to recognize that there's foothills in the way from us getting to the mountain. Are you tracking so far? Does that make sense? We're going to come back to this, and I don't know how that's going to work. We'll just hope for the best. Matthew chapter 23 is where we're going to start. Last couple verses. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as... There it goes. A hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So Jesus is hanging out with his disciples, and they're overlooking the city of Jerusalem. And Jesus is looking at Jerusalem, talking about Jerusalem. He's like, your destruction is going to come because you have been so bad to all the prophets. You've killed your own prophets. And so he's like saying, in this whole realm of teaching that he's given the disciples, he's downloading all this information. They're walking out together and they're like, well, look at this beautiful city. And he's like, yep, that city is going to be destroyed. It's going to be destroyed. He said they've killed other prophets before him, and he expects that he'll be the latest one. I think that's the analogy he's trying to get at. And then we get to chapter 24. It's all in the same conversation, same context. It says, Jesus left the temple, and he was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple, but he answered them, you see all those, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. So they're like, look at all these beautiful buildings, Jesus. So beautiful. And Jesus says, it's all going away. Not one stone will be left on top of another one. It's all going to go away. And for them, imagine how impossible that would be. How beautiful this city was for them. Like, this city is our crowning achievement. This temple, specifically, is our human achievement. They could not imagine that kind of destruction. If you go to the next slide, you can kind of see an example. This whole thing is a half a football field size. It's a model. But look how big the temple was compared to the rest of the city. It dominated the city. And so they're overlooking it, and Jesus is saying, it's all going away. It's all getting destroyed. And they could not believe it. Look at the next slide. I think I have on here. See this rubble? These are from the temple that you can go today and see those stones. They're the size of cars. That's how big those stones are. And so the disciples had no frame of reference for this. Here's verse 3. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So the disciples ask two questions that are going to dominate the rest of this conversation. They ask two questions. Here's the first question was, when will this be? In other words, when's the destruction going to be, right? When will this be? I should add somebody else to do this. This be. That's question number one. And question number two is, show us a sign. So what are the signs of the end of the age? What, I cannot talk and write at the same time, are the signs of the end of the age? End of age. Got it? That's the two questions. They are separating out two different things. Actually, they might in their heads have them tied together. When will this destruction be? Because that's the end of the age for them. They think there's no way it could get any worse than that, right? But Jesus is going to take those two questions and handle them separately. Here's going to be a sign, but also a sign of the end of the age, and when will this be? I'm going to have to get a better situation for this. How about this? All right. All right. In the clutch right there. So we got two questions. When will this be, and what will be the sign of the coming and the end of the age? Two questions get two separate answers. I'm going to go ahead and reveal the answers. Verse 34, he'll say, this generation will not pass away. How long is a generation for them? Think about it. Big number for the Bible. Use it over and over. 40 years. 40 years. When will this happen? This generation is not going to pass away. He's saying, within 40 years, guess what? Jerusalem temple is destroyed 37 years later after he said it. What will be the sign? Oh, I wrote that wrong. What will be the sign? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Verse 36, so right after verse 34, he says, concerning that day and hour, nobody knows. Nobody knows. We don't know. One question you can answer, yep, it'll happen. Most of you will be alive to see it. Tell the disciples that. The other one is, I don't know. And he handles these two things separately. And if we look at the diagram of these mountains, Jesus is saying this big mountain in the back, we don't know when that's going to happen. But all of these foothills, of which one of them, the temple being destroyed, is one of them, we know when that's going to happen, and it'll be within 40 years from now. That's what he was saying. And it says it's going to get bad. Look at verse 4. We're going to go back to verse 4. And Jesus answered them, see that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ. And they'll lead many astray. And you'll hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nations will rise against nations, and kingdoms against kingdoms, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these are but the beginning of the birth pains. So within 40 years, this generation will not pass, but it's going to get bad. There's going to be posers. There's going to be the wrong kinds of leaders. It will feel like the end of the world, but it's not. It's going to feel pretty bad because when you're on one of these hills, it sucks. But it's not this one. It looks, when you're on it, it looks like this one. But it's not this one. It's just one of the other hills, other foothills to get there. He says it's the beginning of birth pangs. Have you ever heard of Braxton Hicks? It's like phony labor, right? You think you're going into labor, but you're not. It's just a taste of what labor is going to be like. Labor is a good metaphor because the pain of the moment. Here's the thing. Here's what we normally think. This big moment here brings destruction, right? We all get wiped out. The earth gets destroyed. Birth pains bring what? Life. Brings new life. He's like, don't be alarmed. This is just the way of the world. This is how it goes. It's painful sometimes. But when you get to the end of it, there's new life. And just like Foothills, they're all kind of the same. They all kind of have a rhyme to them. They all look very similar, but they're all leading to a bigger moment. Here's verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to be persecuted and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another, and many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. What question is he answering here? Which of these two questions? Kind of sounds like it, but I think he's still talking about the temple. He's still talking about the next 37 years, you're going to find these things happen. But also, it's a foothill. It looks like a lot of the other foothills. So, Rodney, you're not wrong, because it all leads us to things that we will see in the future. Some people think that Jesus is good news, and other people think that Jesus is just ridiculousness. I mean, think about it. We believe that a guy lived 2,000 years ago and he died, and then he lives again? Huh? That sounds crazy if you haven't, like, bought into it and believed in it. But here's the thing. Three things that will happen that will make people bail on faith. Because, like Rodney said, it sounds like the big one. Okay, here's three things that will make people bail. Pressure from the outside. Okay, he says persecution, mockery. Rot from within, there'll be false prophets come up, people who have religious or political agenda, and they try to get people on their team, but they actually have nothing to do with Jesus. And then apathy due to wickedness and lawlessness. The way of Jesus is so countercultural, and we redefine good and evil, and people will grow tired of bucking the wicked system. And then we just simply become like the world because we're just tired of trying to be different, you know? What does that sound like? Where do we hear these types of things happening in church history? The book of Acts. You could read it in the book of Acts. There's all three of those things. You can look at it during World War II, it happened. Look at it right now in our church today. All three of those things are happening. Jesus is saying all of those things kind of look alike. They're all different, but they all look just a little bit alike. What he wants us to be about is the first and second greatest commandment. We're all to be about love, loving God, loving others. These three things kind of distract us from that. While those things are similar to our faith today, they've been happening over and over and over and over and over again since Jesus first said these words. It's just part of living the human life and being part of faith. They happen over and over again. Look the same, a little bit different. Verse 13, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. So the key is endurance. It's like, hang on. The one who stands firm with intentional consistency of love God, love others all the way to the end, those will be the ones who are saved. He doesn't say anything about somebody who has the best blog. He doesn't say anything about the most followers on social media but with your Jesus account. He doesn't say anything about ones with the most church attendance. He doesn't say anything about the best singers or the writers or the most famous preachers. He doesn't say anything about the one who wins their most neighbors to Jesus is the one who endures to the end. He says, no, just the ones who endure, intentionally loving God and loving others to the end. Endure with that through to the end. You don't have to be constantly warning people, oh, there's impending doom. The mountain's coming. No, just love them. Love them as Jesus loved them. Love them as God loves. Endure in that. Here's verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So Jesus is acknowledging that the fall of Jerusalem is not the end. This mountain right here that they're thinking like, that would be the end for them. It's not the end. It's just a foothill. But there's something greater. Something else is happening. And it gives the marching orders. This isn't going to happen until everybody in the world has heard about Jesus. It's not happening until everybody in the world has had an opportunity to hear about Jesus. It's 2,000 years worth of marching orders that we've often ignored. The problem is that in the meantime, we go somewhere on this spectrum of, well, I don't really care, or I'm really weirded out by all of it, the tinfoil hat. So we go somewhere in the spectrum. We either go crazy with it, or we withdraw from it, and therefore we lose our endurance for loving God and loving others to endure to the end. That's what Jesus wants us to do. Simply endure to the end. Stand firm and share the good news of Jesus Christ. That's the mindset that we are to have to endure. Here's verse 15. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, and then Matthew adds in, let the reader understand. Let me just stop right there. He gives us parentheses, let the reader understand. It's Matthew's note. He says, go read the prophets. Go figure out what Daniel says. Go read that. Then you'll kind of have a better understanding of what Jesus is saying right now. And in particular about this first question that he's talking about, the destruction and downfall of the temple in Jerusalem. After Israel's rejection of Jesus, over the next 30 years, a rebellion broke out against the Romans until war actually started in 66 AD, and that war went on from 66 to 70 AD. And then, again, I've showed this here, they completely annihilated the temple. In 70 AD, the Romans came in and wiped out the temple. They destroyed the city, they burned it, they sacked the temple, they took all the gold, all the furniture. They sacrificed to their own gods on the altar that's meant for the one true God for worship through the Jewish people. They believed that their gods were stronger than Israel's God because they won the war, right? So they sacrificed. They pried the temple apart, stone by stone. And so if you're reading along, now, so we have that perspective of history. We know that's a historical event. If you don't believe me, you can go look that one up. It's there. But Jesus is doing this 37 years before that event happened. And he says, all of these things are going to take place till you see this foothill happening. And what does he tell them? If you're following along verse 16, what does he tell them to do? When you see all this happening, what do? Anybody have it? He says, run. Run, flee. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be great distress, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now. No. And never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would survive. So it seems now that Jesus is changing from a local event to the main event, right? No destruction will occur like this. No destruction has ever happened like this before, and you've never seen it before. It'll never be this bad. You've never seen it this way. And it could be that Jesus is talking about both the foothills and the mountains. Could be that this is part, like he's just kind of rolling it all together as one thing. Tim Mackey would disagree. He's a Bible scholar. He says it's hyperbole to some extent. Like Jesus is using hyperbole to gain their attention, like Jesus often did. He would use hyperbole in his speaking. It would be like if I said, "I caught the biggest fish." You know, you would forgive me a little bit if I said I caught the, you see what I'm doing? I caught the biggest fish. You kind of forgive me for that because, you know, like, obviously I didn't catch the biggest fish that was out there in the world. We give Jesus grace when he tells us to pluck out of our eye, right? We don't actually go and do that. He says that we should hate our parents, but we kind of don't do that, right? We understand Jesus does. He's prone to hyperbole. Jesus is highlighting this major event for them. It was a massive event that fits the plan of God in getting towards the main event. This has to happen in order for this to happen. And for them, it would be the biggest thing for them to happen. When we get to these foothills, precipice points, it sure feels like the main event. I remember in the depths of 2020, and lots of people were like, "He's coming back. He has to, because we're on this foothill that feels like the mountain." But really, turns out it was just another foothill, and there's been pandemics before. There'll be pandemics again. We've just never experienced it. So our foothill felt like the mountain. And when we're on that foothill and we see this destruction happening, it feels like the end. And actually, for some it is. Think about World War II and how many millions and millions of people died in that conflict. For them, that foothill had to feel like the mountain. None of us have experienced that, but I've heard stories. All right, Jesus goes on. Matthew chapter 24, 22 through 28. "But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anybody says to you, 'Look, here's the Christ,' or 'There he is,' do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I've told you beforehand." I'm telling you guys, there's going to be people trying to trick you and pretend like they're me. "So if they say to you, 'Look, he's in the wilderness,' do not go out. If they say, 'Look, he's in the inner room,' do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather." It's exactly what happened right after Jesus left. As soon as he ascended to heaven, there's all kinds of people who were leading this rebellion, trying to get people on their team. Like, "Look, I'm that Jesus guy. I came back like I said I would." And they would be out in the wilderness, or they'd be in a room, and they're trying to gather followers around him. Jesus is saying, "Look, don't be a part of that. That's not the way of the kingdom that I have for you." Jesus is telling now, I think, us. He's like, "I know how humans are. I know who you are. You follow people who prey on your fear." Let that sink in for a second. Jesus knows what we do when we feel like the world is falling apart. We will believe anything that anyone says that will give us something that feels good, that either feeds the fear or finds a way to impact us so we don't have that fear. Jesus is saying, don't bite on it. Don't bite on that stuff. I will refer us back to what he said to do instead. All you need to do is simply stand firm. Endure to the end by loving God, loving others, and spread the good news about Jesus. When the chaos of life gets really difficult, what are we to do? Stand firm, endure to the end through loving God and loving others and spreading his good news. I think we're about done here. Verse 29, "Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken, and then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other." which mountain is he talking about now? Which one of these questions is he answering? It sounds an awful lot like he could be talking about the big one in the back. Oh, he's got to be talking about the big one in the back. Even though the next thing he says right after that, the very next thing he says is, that's all going to happen in the next 40 years. It could be that he was talking about the next 40 years and he was just wrong. Could be. I don't think Jesus is ever wrong. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say he was talking about the sun and the moon was supposed to go dark 40 years, and like, he just got it wrong. That's one way to say it or think about it. I don't think so. There's another view. In all what I just read, Jesus is quoting verbatim Isaiah 13, which is about the downfall of Babylon, which was the capital city of the largest, most brutal empire of the ancient world. They had come in and they had wiped out the Israelites in Jerusalem once before. Isaiah said the sun, the moon, and the stars would go dark. The world as they knew it would come to an end when Babylon was destroyed. And in Jesus' mind, Jerusalem had become the new Babylon. And he's talking about Jerusalem is Babylon now. And he predicts that just as Babylon was destroyed, so too will Jerusalem be destroyed. And he's just simply quoting Isaiah 13. He also quotes Daniel 7. He says, the appearance of the Son of Man. There's a super beast in Daniel chapter 7. It's a future king that will trample on the Son of Man. And yet God sets up a throne for the Son of Man to come in on the cloud so that all people, languages, and nations would gather together. And this is the Son of Man going up to join God. It's not a second coming, but an exaltation of Jesus. What event do we know that Jesus was trampled on and then resurrected and then ascended? We know that's how Jesus lived and died, and lived again, and then ascended to heaven. His death, resurrection, and ascension. Then his disciples would go out into the world and gather all the nations of people who would believe in Jesus. Verse 32, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also when you see all these things, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. All of that stuff that we often look at as the main event, Jesus is telling us, actually, it's just one of these foothills. These are things that have been impacting humanity from the beginning. You know, think about the destruction of Egypt. It would have been a huge downfall for them. It was the only world they knew. And then Babylon comes along, wipes out the Israelites. Then Greece comes along, wipes out Babylon. And then it was Syria first, and then Greece, and then Rome came and wiped out the Greeks. And then Rome kind of imploded from within, but its system is still out there these days. He's telling us that's just part of being human. It's part of living in this world. It's hard sometimes. We're being impacted by some of it now. We haven't been used to it, and it sometimes feels like it's the main event because we're not used to that. What does Jesus say to us? How to live as followers of him when the entire world feels like it's falling apart? Jesus' caution to us is, do not have fear. Don't be prone to fear. Things have always been kind of bad, and they'll always kind of continue to be bad. But we're meant to endure to the end by loving God and loving others and bringing good news to them. So I'd ask you, think about it. Where are you on that spectrum? I don't even really care about any of this stuff. I'm watching all the headlines, and I got to know that it's happening tomorrow. You know, where are you on that spectrum? Where are you prone to fear and maybe extremism? Where are you prone to apathy? Who in your family or your circle of friends need to be walked back from this fear of the age in order to live in hope of Jesus' eventual return? And how can you show love to other people when it feels like this whole world is falling down around you? That's what Jesus has for us. He taught it to the disciples. He's teaching it to us today. Next week, we're going to look at the second question. And I promise we'll get to it. Jesus' words on his own second coming and what we can expect and what we can understand from his word. Let's pray. God, we do thank you that we get to be a part of your kingdom and a part of a world where you show us continued grace and mercy. Help us to be a part of the repentance of all people, the repentance of people to come closer to you and know you better. Help us not to expect or hope for destruction, but that we can be a part of the bringing together in holiness the people who love you. Be with us as we face times of confusion and destruction all around us, when the whole world is feeling like it's falling apart, and we have hope in you.